Good afternoon, everybody. And if I look tired, it's because I am. It's been a long, long 24 hours, to say the least. But I did want to give you a brief opening statement and just open it up for questions. I'm sure you have a lot of questions about what transpired on that terrible day yesterday. But as I look out the window, the sun is shining and this is a new day. And we're going to get past this. There's no doubt, but we've got to learn from it. So here goes. Yesterday's attack was an unprecedented threat to our democracy. It was completely and totally unacceptable. What happened yesterday was shameful. A violent mob stormed our nation's capital and attempted to stop me and my colleagues from certifying the electoral vote, which is our solemn duty. Thanks to law enforcement, they failed. We rightfully certified the election of Joe Biden. We need to be clear on what happened. By repeating disproven claims about election malfeasance, President Trump incited and encouraged this unlawful and unpatriotic attack. And in response, he doubled down on those same false claims and issued a half-hearted rebuke while noting they were, quote, special people, end quote, to him. That being the people stormed the Capitol. The peaceful transition of power is a sacred process deliberately outlined in the Constitution to ensure the stability of our nation. The importance of this process is far bigger than any one president, President Trump, and it will not be thwarted by any sort of violent mob. As a party and a nation, we must now work to regain the trust of the American people. Even in light of the attack, many of my colleagues sustained their objections to the electoral vote. That was very disheartening to me. And I called for unity last night and I asked our leaders to shut this down. Unfortunately, they were not able to. Be that as it may, we are where we are. Like I said, the sun is shining today. There is calm in the Capitol. It is a complete mess, and we can talk about that. But we did do our business. And one thing that really struck me about yesterday and last night was the complete chaos that I witnessed unfolding all around me. Everything from hearing flashbangs and tear gas canisters going off to seeing the incredible violence in the house and the loss of life, and thinking, how can we go on with this? There's no way we'd be able to get this done. And then within a matter of hours, there we were in the wee hours of the morning, sitting amongst shards of glass and broken doors and windows, doing the people's business. That made me feel much better about the heart and soul of our democracy. And we are gonna be okay going forward. So with that, I'll open up to everybody. Any questions you may have?
Looks like Robert, you got a question? Go ahead.
Hi, Robert.
Just given the president's conduct here, and I know that one of your colleagues, Congressman Kinziger, has called for this, Senator Schumer has called for this, the invoking of the 25th Amendment. Do you think that that step is necessary, and or do you think Congress should act on that? And then secondly, I did want to ask about the Capitol Police response to this. I know that there are concerns about, especially protecting you and your colleagues, about their response and whether or not they were prepared.
Understand that there is a process for even the 25th Amendment. Due process is a fundamental bedrock of our nation, and it applies to the 25th Amendment as well. So it's not a question of just going to tap them on the shoulder and saying, oh, come on, come with us, we're invoking the 25th Amendment. What has to happen is the cabinet and the vice president need to send a notification of some sort to the House and the Senate that they are intending to invoke the 25th Amendment. The president, if they object, has the opportunity to contest and litigate it in the House and Senate. And that process is not a short process. It doesn't happen overnight. At a minimum, it's several days, if not several weeks, it can be drawn out. And in 13 days, we're gonna have a peaceful transition of power on January 20th. It's kind of a moot conversation because I don't think it would be done in time for this to happen. Be that as it may, I'm looking very forward to January 20th. The president, his conduct was completely reprehensible. I think that when January 20th comes, I think America will be happy and I will be happy. And so I hope that helps. Now, with respect to the Capitol Hill Police, I remember yesterday morning walking out of my building early on when the protesters were starting to, it was obvious that there was gonna be quite a protest and they were gathering down to watch the president's speech. I was shocked by the lack of security around. It seemed very much like business as usual, except for some gates that were up around the campus. I don't blame the frontline worker of the frontline Capitol Hill police. My God, those people endured unbelievable things last night, and they exhibited such courage for the most part. It was remarkable. Many of them were injured, and some of them severely, but they still did their job. And I remember meeting with a lot of them afterwards down in the cafeteria and talking with them and it's thanking them. Some had bloody hands, some had torn clothes, some looked absolutely frazzled, but they did their job. What I'm really concerned about is the command structure and what the command was thinking about, because Robert, you're absolutely right. What I anticipated for weeks was that this was going to be very difficult. It was going to be a very difficult day because you're going to have a mass of people coming on January 6th to the Capitol. And it was clear that they were under the false belief, fueled in part by the president and fueled in part by others, who thought that they actually had a chance to overturn the election. There was no chance from the beginning for that to happen, because even if every single Republican voted for it, not a single Democrat would. They have the majority. That wouldn't happen. So it was a false hope that these people had. And I was always concerned that once that false hope was realized after we certified the Electoral College, I thought that's when things were going to pop. And then what the president did kind of lit a match to everything and made it much worse. And that's why it happened quicker. I think the command structure at Capitol Hill Police needs to be brought to task to explain their thought processes and what they were doing. Capitol Hill Police is supposed to be welcoming and keeping the Capitol safe. They're not so good with crowd control of this size, because their job is to protect the buildings. But when they get overwhelmed like they did, they had no chance. And I thought they performed admirably. But we do need to know what happened and why they didn't have more help at the outset. I think it was a very serious mistake on their part. And going forward, we're going to do a complete investigation, and I volunteer to help run that investigation. Absolutely stunning.
You talked a lot about President Trump inciting violence and things like that. This is perhaps the biggest concrete example we've had, but this is no different from the kind of rhetoric he's had ever since he took office. Do you feel that either yourself or your Republican colleagues share some of the blame for what happened, for not reining in the president sooner?
Listen, I've been calling to start certifying the election from the beginning. So the president hasn't encouraged a loud and angry mob to go up to the Capitol and raise hell, and he might join them before. He hasn't he crossed a Rubicon that he has not crossed before. But I think what this whole incident taught us was that rhetoric and words matter and conduct matters. And clearly, if I knew back then what I saw yesterday, I clearly wouldn't have supported him, and I can't support him going forward. And I don't think the party's going to support him going forward. So I guess that's how I feel. I mean, listen, he definitely crossed into a different level of heated rhetoric, and he went from heated rhetoric to inciting violence. And that's something that is new to me.
Next, we have Ellen Abbott.
Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Congressman. Thanks for taking our questions. I was just, going on what you were just talking about, the political future. Do you think his political future is now dead? I mean, it seems like so many members of the party have said goodbye and, are now criticizing him. Is he done?
Well, the issues he tapped into and the people that had become politically active and because of him are a movement unto themselves. So I think the good elements of that are going to transcend this incident. But he cannot be the standard bearer for our party going forward. And I think people are recognizing that. And I think he needs to recognize that as well.
And another question, just a lot of the congressmen who were contesting the vote, so to speak, the vote count, had constituents, kind of intimated constituents were forcing them to do this. Do you get a lot of calls from constituents, asking you before this happened to do the same thing? I mean, was there a groundswell in Central New York on this, or you just ignored?
Well, look, my district is probably one of the most politically diverse districts in the country. We have more Democrats and Republicans, obviously. But, we have far left, we have far right, and we have a lot of moderate swing voters. So, yeah, of course, I heard from that camp. But I also heard from others on the other side of the fence. So that's typical for my district. So it wasn't a surprise to hear a cross-section.
Great. We have Chris Bolt.
Hey, Chris.
Hi, how's it going? Glad you and your staff are safe. I guess you said you didn't have staff there, so.
Yeah.
Two things, maybe looking forward. How can we go forward? This illustrated a division we knew was there. We might not have expected it to reach the fervor that it reached, but in some people's minds, it wasn't really that surprising seeing rallies, et cetera. How can we go forward under President Biden, under a Congress that you'll be part of, to start to reach across, heal divides, talk to the people who are so far on either extreme that they never hear, you know, the fact checking if it's about election lies or the concerns of the people who feel so disenfranchised that they do what happened yesterday?
Yeah, I think it starts with understanding that, you know, there are two sides, or people have alternative opinions. And look at my colleagues last night voting to decertify the election. I couldn't disagree with them more. I wasn't shouting at them. I tried to have conversations with them and discuss things with them. But I think we need to do that. I think we need to realize there is nowhere in our lives that we get 100% of what we want, right? Not in our personal lives, not in our relationships, our marriages, our partners, not in our business transactions or our work issues. We never get 100% of what you want. But it seems like lately people believe that their opinion on a political issue is the only opinion that matters. And it's not just the right, the left is the same way, right? They're intolerant, they're both intolerant of each other. And that's what's frustrating for someone like me who tries to work with both sides. So I think going forward, we've all got to do a better job of that. All of us, you, me, all of us. The media has a role in this. I have a role in this. Leaders have a role in this, but we all do. And I had a friend call me at one point that I was a friend with for 20 years and basically ended our friendship because I had a different political view than him. That's not what we should be doing in this country. And when we get to that point, we've got a problem. Maybe this is the beginning of the time where people to realize like, whoa, we've all got to take a deep breath here. And listen, we've been through these types of things in the past in our country, obviously in the 1860s and elsewhere. And in this 1960s and in the protest movements and the anti-Vietnam War stuff, there's a lot of times where things have gotten sticky, but we've always seemed to be able to come back from the abyss. I'm pretty confident we're going to be able to here. I think Biden will be able to help calm the rhetoric so long as the far left doesn't overtake his agenda. I think that'll be okay. And I think, you know, I really do think the media has a role to play in this as well. The media is much more segmented than it used to be. And I think for the sake of the democracy, we all need to do this together, and we all need to endeavor to try and have more harmonious things. Let's face it, from a news standpoint, maybe about a third or a quarter of my the bills I get passed the House showing the productivity of me and everything get reported on, maybe, except maybe for the newspapers. Those kinds of things. I mean, we don't just have to talk about controversy. I know controversy sells, but maybe we got to start doing a better job on reporting on things that are happening in government that are good, and not having people get so frustrated. But we all have a role to play in it, all of us.